Good evening, and welcome to Fairy Tales. I'm your bouncing host, Chris, and I'm joined by my partner, Abby, and we're going to be discussing quite a unique case tonight. Tonight's Fairy Tales is going to be a little bit different. We're going to change up the format just a little bit, and I'm going to introduce the story into the facts of the case and incorporate them in that way. I also have some announcements that I would love to have you stick around and pay attention to at the end of the episode. First, we're going to visit a small bridge in Northern Virginia, where we're going to pick up a tale that seemingly came to life one Halloween in 1970. From nothing, we get to witness the creation of a new urban legend. This story has been passed around for the last 50 years. Join us tonight as we take a look at the Colchester Overpass and the strange case of the Bunny Man of Fairfax County. Now, lock the doors and check the windows. Grab a warm drink for this warm night. Settle into your favorite chair. It's time for another fairy tale. So tonight, we're gonna go to a little bridge called Colchester Overpass. So this is located at 6497 Colchester Road in Clifton, Virginia. It's a little subset outside of Washington, D.C. in the greater Alexandria and D.C. area. Colchester Road is a one-lane road, and it passes under a single set of train tracks, and it goes through a small concrete tunnel. The bypass was built in about 1906 near the site of what was known as Sangster Station. So this overpass, the road is literally one lane. If you were coming up to the bridge at the same time as somebody else, one of you is going to have to wait. But it is pretty long, so it's about three standard car sizes long, so there's no room to pass, nothing you could do but just wait there.
Sounds like a quaint, cute old bridge.
It's very cute. The pictures are pretty nice. It's not really kind of old-timey. It is concrete. It does have spray paint on the inside. It's brick on the outside. But the drive up to it is absolutely gorgeous from what I've seen. There's no lights or signs or anything warning, though, that there's like a tight bridge and that there's no room to pass. Really, it's just a beautiful drive. However, it can kind of get sinister at night. There's no lights whatsoever, so this bridge can just kind of come up on you.
That's intense.
Yeah. So it's no surprise that kids have been telling stories about this bridge for a long time. So since October 1970, a series of tales were beginning to be told among the local high school and college-age kids. From what reports I saw, it was going down to the elementary school kids as well. So everybody was kind of telling this tale. So the legend that the kids were telling and that what they tell still to this day is that if you go through the bridge, through that tunnel at midnight on Halloween, you stop there, you turn off your car, you do the whole traditional haunted bridge kind of stuff, and supposedly a hatchet-bearing killer will appear and will murder you and hang you from the side of the bridge for the next time.
What is my motivation to do this?
Well, I mean, it's an urban legend and people want to try to find out if it's real.
And die.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely aiming to do that if you do participate in this game. But I guess that's the whole thing. Some say that you also have to say this guy's name three times.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Not quite, but it does start with a B. You'd actually have to go Bunny Man, Bunny Man, Bunny Man.
Whoa, 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 whoa. So on Halloween, we're summoning the Bunny Man.
Yes, that is. I mean, you could do this at any time, but of course it's popular to do at Halloween.
Well, you said Halloween night.
Sorry. This one, the legend is you go to Halloween, but it varies depending on who you talk to.
I feel like it would be Easter night.
It could be. I mean, I don't know. that's what we're exploring here. We don't know the purpose of the bunny suit. And that's the whole thing is they call him the Bunny Man because supposedly this hatchet-bearing killer is dressed in a bunny costume for some odd reason. So the earliest records of the tale, again, started in about 1970. So the tale actually supposedly begins in the 1900s. And here's how it goes. So once upon a time, a bus was traveling down Colchester Pass when it suddenly crashed.
Oh, no.
Well, the bus in question here was actually full of inmates that they were transferring to the local psychiatric center, for kinder words.
Isn't that always the case? It's either inmates, kids, or nuns.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's to get your heart racing in one of many ways. So this group of convicts, they were being transferred over to the insane asylum. The bus crashed. Fortunately, or I guess unfortunately, depending on your side of things, most of the criminals lived and escaped from the crash bus.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, they were able to find most of them, and there were a couple deaths, unfortunately, but two did manage to escape.
Dang it.
For a time. Because, you see, it's said that not long after the crash, the body of one of these convicts was found hanging from the Colchester overpass.
Wow.
According to some accounts, there was a sign put around his neck, signed The Bunny Man.
Hmm.
So, of course, officers and townspeople, everybody, they're looking in the woods. They're trying to find this guy, you know, because obviously he did something to this convict. The search continued, and, you know, they weren't able to find much except for a lot of half-eaten rabbits all over.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what makes it even worse is he was hanging these from the trees.
Mm.
So finally, after an extensive search, they finally cornered the killer. They had him in their grasp. They were ready to get in there and arrest him when a passing train took him out.
So, okay, I might be getting ahead of myself, but did they know this was the other convict?
Well, that's the legend here, is that this was the second convict. They found him, like, they were ready to arrest him, and he just stepped on the train tracks right when a train was coming by.
See, I could go that way, but I could also go that I live in this area, and I hear that a bus of convicts crashed, and I know that one of them is someone who did me or a family member of mine wrong, so I go out and take my revenge. And then I'm done with it.
Oh, man. I do like that version. That's a pretty good version. Well, the thing is, this isn't true. There's really nothing really to base it.
I'm shocked.
This was the campfire story. This was my story. I didn't need to feel the need to do a long one because the story is about how the story came about. So this actually comes from a written version that was widely circulated called The Clifton Bunny Man. It was signed by Timothy C. Forbes of Virginia and posted on the website called Castle of Spirits around 1999.
Hmm. OG internet.
Yeah, it was probably on Mediafire as well, although I have no real proof of that. So this is the tale that was kind of formulated from what a lot of reports were saying over the last 20 years at that point, from the 70s up till the 90s. So this was quite notable because there are really a lot of specific facts that were given. I didn't put them in my story, but Forbes claims that in this 1904 story, the inmates escaped while being transferred to Lorton Prison, which was a real prison in that area. One of the escapees was Douglas J. Griffin, who was a real person that supposedly they were able to find. Another real person is the one who was murdered, Marcus Walster.
Hmm.
So he's given all these names, facts, and everything. And supposedly Marcus Walster is the one who killed Douglas that night, and he became the Bunny Man. So they give all this information, and then this one is also fake.
What?
There was no asylum ever built in that area. And the prison that did exist didn't actually show up till 1910.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's just one of the examples of the kind of stories that were being told and passed around about this Bunny Man. It has a very legitimate sounding reason for why this bridge might be haunted. Some other possible origins that I came across were he was a mental patient who had escaped custody to exact revenge for the murders of his wife and child. So he ate rabbits and he would wear their hides, and local kids would come to torment him, and finally he was found dead and hanging from the trees.
From kids?
Yeah, apparently.
That's just savage.
They are savage. I mean, kids are savage. Look, I got notes on some savage kids we're going to be talking about eventually.
Yeah, I got some texts from you today about it. And I started singing some My Chemical Romance.
So the other one is that he is an escaped ghost from a local asylum. In this one, he does show up dressed in a white bunny costume, and he throws axes or knives at passing cars or couples out walking around.
I'm just caught up on the implication that he's an escaped ghost, as if there's someone holding the ghost in the asylum.
Look, I mean, it's...
If I'm dead, I want to go where I want to go. I want to throw what I want to throw at cars. Leave me the dang alone.
I guess you're well within that, right? I mean, you're right. Nobody can stop these ghosts. People try. People do. So I want you to keep in mind the throwing of the knives and stuff in the bunny suit. So all of this, again, these are all different versions of the story, and I'm sure there's plenty of other ones. In fact, I can tell you that there are a lot of variations out of this. And that's because in 1973, a University of Maryland student named Patricia Johnson actually wrote a whole research paper called The Bunny Man.
Oh, wow.
So in this, she interviewed 33 other students about this legend that she'd been hearing around for the last few years. So there were about 54 different variations of the story. Most of them agreed on a couple key facts. The rabbit suit, hatchets, or axes being used. So out of these variations, though, there were a few differences that I wanted to cover here. So there were about 14 different locations that this supposedly took place at. And this was all across Fairfax and into Maryland. So that's why there's a lot of different ones. And it goes from as far south as Richmond all the way up to Baltimore.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So 18 of the stories involve a bunny man chasing or frightening people, usually children, and he's using a hatchet or an axe. And sometimes the hatchet gets thrown into the car. 14 of the stories are about specifically attacks on cars. 9 of them claim he attacked a couple while they were in the car. There are 5 that also accuse him of vandalism on homes or buildings. Out of all of these stories, though, only 3 mention murder specifically.
But they're definitely implied or attempted in the others.
Yes. So pretty much all the stories are about some crazed thing, entity, in a white bunny suit, running out of the woods, attacking people. And then sometimes in these stories, you come across the bridge and there's already a kid being hanged there or something like that.
But there's no death reports to corroborate.
No, and that's what's interesting. So we are going to go into the real life things that Patricia was able to find. So as part of this research paper, she really wanted to understand where did this legend come from. She had actually found some older stories regarding some unfortunate events that happened in the early 1900s, but most of those were pretty inconsistent. None of them really mentioned bunny suits, axes, parked cars, vandalism, nothing to really show where that they might have been linked to these 1970s stories.
Well, you know, around that time, there was just a lot of, it was a wild time, and there was a lot of wild things going on and a lot of wild ways to die.
Yeah, really were. There still are. It's just getting bigger and bigger. So there were some real reports in 1970 of a man in supposedly a white outfit, which could have been either a bunny outfit or a KKK robe, who were threatening people for being on his land.
KKK bunny rabbits.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if it's dark and you're scared, that could kind of look like a bunny suit. Not the kind of bunny I want to hang out with. So out of these reports, no arrests were actually made, but 2 of these, so these incidences seem like kind of similar to a few of the variations that we had heard.
Okay.
So the first incident we're going to look at was reported the evening of October 19th in 1970, and this was by a U.S. Air Force Academy cadet, Robert Bennett, and his fiancée.
Seems credible.
Mm-hmm. So Robert was bringing his fiance to Guinea Road in Burke because he had an uncle that supposedly lived across the street from this football game that was going on. So he was Robert was on leave, and he was, you know, just showing his girlfriend the site, or his fiance the sights, and they decided to go ahead and park their car in a field on Guinea Road. This was actually to visit the uncle that they were there to see. So they're sitting in the front seat for a little bit before going in, and the motor is running.
Just sitting there. Yeah, totally just, innocent.
Nothing really going on. And then they notice something moving outside the rear window. Moments later, the front passenger window is smashed. And then there was a white-clad figure standing near the window.
I'm sorry, did you say, is it daylight or nighttime at this time?
This is around midnight, actually. Okay. I did not say. So this is around midnight. So Bennett turned the car around while the man screamed at them about trespassing, saying, "You're on private property and I have your tag number."
Oh, snap.
So they're driving down the road, obviously terrified, and what do they see on the floor of the car but a hatchet?
Huh.
So.
I have so many questions.
You can ask.
Okay. Why did they drive away down the road? Why weren't they parked at the uncle's house? If they weren't doing anything nefarious, why didn't they just park at the uncle's freaking house?
I don't know.
And then why did they not go to the uncle's house?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm guessing they were too scared to get out of the car, so they figured just driving away and then coming back. But yeah, I think they were looking for some...
This was a lover's lane field.
Yeah, it really was. And that's kind of why this is similar, because it does seem like a lover's lane kind of thing. And many people were wondering if this was just kind of a variation of that coming from the 50s and 60s, where it was a very popular urban legend.
Can I say, the one thing that I have learned is never park on a lover's lane in Virginia.
Never, ever, no.
Not in Virginia.
If you want to know more information about that, please check out Beautiful Places to Die for our 4-part series on the Colonial Parkway murders. So, while the police, they did get this report, you know, Robert and his fiance decided to go and tell the police what happened. They asked, like, okay, what was the dude wearing? So, Bennett kind of says it was a white suit with very long bunny ears. His fiance, though, who did not get named in any of these reports or newspaper articles, because I guess she's a woman, I don't know. She contested that their assailant did not have bunny ears, but was wearing a white capirote of some sort.
What is that?
It is a long, coned hood that covers your face, much like the KKK wear.
Freaking Nazis.
Uh-huh. So, they did remember seeing the face clearly, which would probably not be the KKK mask because those are covered. If this was a rabbit costume, I know there are variations where they have the human face cut out and it's just like a bodysuit. So they said that they could see the face, but they weren't really sure of the race because it was dark. And the police just, you know, they said, okay, you know, what do you want us to do? Robert said really nothing much because there's nothing much to do. They gave the hatchet back to Robert, I guess because they thought he wanted it.
Huh.
I mean, I would, honestly. It didn't go anywhere. I'd be like, cool, tell people this is my rabbit hatchet.
Rabbit hatchet. Sounds like a brand.
So as you pointed out, this had a lot of similarities to typical Lover's Lane stories, as well as some of the stories we saw coming out of this. We saw a couple parked in a car, a creepy costume, a hatchet being left in the vehicle. It just really sounds similar to the Hookman story, which I've covered before on this podcast, and is another Lover's Lane mystery.
I think that these Lover's Lane killers probably go back to as far as cars do.
Most likely.
Maybe further with carriages.
It's possible. Like, hey, don't go out in the carriage and go necking in the woods. The Mothman's going to get you. So this was reported in the newspaper. I did find it in the Washington Post, where they did go over all of these cases, but they really didn't have much to go on. No police report has ever been found on this, so it's kind of maybe speculation that what if Bennett was just kind of playing a prank on his fiance at the time?
Like a buddy of his?
Yeah, like, or maybe he got his uncle to come and do it, and you know, oh, this would be funny.
That's crazy. I can say, though, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, I would be so on board with this killer and I would like lead his merch team if he was like this big burly killer that dressed as a Playboy bunny.
Oh man, that would be so great. We're gonna have to try to look start that idea. So there was a second sighting. This one occurred on October 29th, 1970.
Almost Halloween.
Almost. It was. It was Halloween weekend, actually. I believe that was a Friday.
Halloween Eve Eve.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Paul Phillips is a security guard who works in a construction site for a bustling new subdivision that's being built in Kings Park West on Guinea Road. Okay. So same road that we saw Paul and his fiance on. Or sorry, Robert and his fiance on.
I wonder if they're building it in that field.
It's possible. I mean, I wasn't sure where they were building it, but it was definitely, there was real stories about the subdivision. This was a new thing that was coming up. So Paul is actually guarding the houses being built from vandals and people wanting to steal the tools that might be still around. So he comes up to this man who is wearing a gray, black, and white bunny costume. He said he was about 20 years old, 5'8", and about 175 pounds.
Did he have the head on? I mean, how would you be able to tell how old he was?
Well, that's the speculation, is we think it was the bunny suit and he kind of had the hood over, but you could still see his face.
So more like bunny ears.
Yeah, kind of, but it was a full suit, like a hairy suit. So this was just 2 weeks after attacking Ben and his fiance. Paul found this bunny. He's taking this long-handled axe to the house's front column, and he's yelling out to Paul, "All you people trespass around here. If you come any closer, I'll chop off your head."
No thanks.
He also, in some reports, says he's going to beat them in the head. So Paul goes to his car, trying to get his handgun, because he's obviously not messing around with this crazy kid. But when he gets back, and the rabbit is gone. 2 days later, though, on Halloween, investigator W.L. Johnson decides to pay a visit to the construction offices at Kings Park West. Okay. So they get this report from Paul as well, and they decide to see if there's any truth to this. So he didn't find any rabbit, but he does get information regarding a call that the office had received from someone identifying themselves as the Axeman. Not to be confused with the Axeman in New Orleans.
I was going
to
say the jazz one?
No, that's a whole... I'm going to have to cover that one. Like, I know it's a big popular case, but it's a fun one. It's just weird. So the Axeman says, "Sir, you have been messing up my property by dumping tree stumps, limbs, and brush and other things on my property. You can make everything right by meeting me tonight and talking about the situation."
A duel.
Yes, an axe duel. So police... duel? What?
Like, how does an axe duel work? Like, is it like throwing?
Yeah, probably. I mean, this guy's obviously good at throwing hatchets.
Okay, so at this point, it's easy to figure out who it is. You find out where you were dumping the stuff. Look who owns the land.
Yeah, really. Well, police set up a stakeout instead of doing that, and they didn't find the bunny. And so they just said, like, this is kind of fake. It sounds more like just children talking about, you know, this. Maybe somebody was doing Halloween pranks. There was one more final word that came in on November 4th. This was another call from a neighborhood mother who said that, "Hey, my son wants to talk to you. He's got some news on this bunny man that you've been looking for." So they go and they interview the son, who's about 8, and he says, "Well, I haven't seen him, but Johnny at school said that Mary from down the street said that her cousin and his dad saw a bunny one time while they were mowing the yard."
Yeah, my friend's cousin's sister's boyfriend in Canada.
Yeah. So Johnson kind of just wipes it all. He says it's closed. There's really no evidence that anybody like this existed, other than the fact that there are a couple newspaper articles. There's one that I actually did read that was quite funny that got passed around on October 31st in November 1st. This was reported all the way through California, Texas, Florida, and it's because one person wrote a story about this, and in that, he said that the bunny man ended up hippity-hopping his way into the woods after causing destruction.
That's hilarious.
It was so good. Like, you just put that in the newspaper.
I just imagine him wagging his little cottontail as it's dripping with blood.
Oh. So by 1976, the legend had become just more of a campfire tale. The variations of the story just grew and grew and grew. They started to include this ghost that haunted the bridge. Now there were kids dying and, you know, being hanged on the bridge and just so many things going on. They'd also tell many stories of, oh, if you go near the bridge, you might see skinned rabbits because the bunny man's there eating.
100%. If I lived in this area, every time I went for a hike, I'd wear a bunny suit.
Uh-huh. So in 92, we actually see another report. A woman goes to the Fairfax County Public Library because she is adamant that she needs to find something because she heard about this murder that happened near her house. It was, you know, this vagrant that she swore she heard about that had killed these kids and hung them from the bridge, and he had possibly attacked some people in their car and threw a hatchet at them. Like, it just happened a couple weeks ago.
And it's gonna be in the library.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, because it didn't happen. Like, it's the same story. She's hearing about these stories off the same roads and is going to investigate them because they sound so real. So what I'm really thinking we're looking at here, though, is what we're seeing is a growing fear of subdivisions.
Oh.
So as I mentioned, this was a new housing development, and these were popping up all over Fairfax and Arlington and D.C. You know, the country's growing. Mm-hmm. We're coming out of the wars. We're coming out of these depressions. We're starting to see the economy booming, so we're trying to get more people to move here. And what do? We create subdivisions.
More room for cars.
Yes. And, you know, that's the thing, is we were turning these quaint little walkable towns where you could find your general store and your everything that you needed within a 5-minute walk. Now that whole 5-minute walk is one neighborhood, and it's going to take you 15 minutes just to drive out of the neighborhood to get to the Kroger down the street.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, if you mix up the fact that, like, this was could have been a Scooby-Doo plot, and maybe, like, this person was trying to keep people away from his land, so he dresses up in his costume and scares them, or even just tells people that this is happening, and it just goes by wildfire. Unfortunately, this didn't stop the subdivisions from growing, and, like, we're just in that now. We're a subdivision world.
Well, you know, how do you go backwards?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we'll figure it out. So based on everything I see, the Bunny Man is just this epicenter of this fear against the rise of suburbia. It could be based on something real that happened, but we don't know. As mentioned, you know, Robert could have been playing a prank. You know, it was Halloween time. Costumes are in stores. It's easy to go grab a costume and mess around with your girlfriend from out of town and say, oh, yeah, we have this local legend about this bunny. And, you know, and then you started it.
Yeah.
You know, there is a real-life vandal, maybe, but if he wore a bunny suit, who knows? I mean, it's really, why would he and why did it matter? But it became something big. It became an urban legend. We got to see this evolve in real time. And as I mentioned, this was reported on all over the country, so this didn't stay in one region. Bunny Man is well known. It's a story that's been covered and retold across so many different platforms. It was sold in the Amazon original series, Lore, and it also had a little vignette on Adult Swim telling the story.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. In 2001, Fox did a TV show called Scariest Places on Earth, and they did an episode featuring this, which is season 2, episode 19. It's actually a whole episode about urban legends, and they went ahead and did one segment on the Bunny Man Bridge.
I basically want to go to every location on that show.
Oh, I'm sure. We haven't even watched it yet. We'll have to. So as you mentioned earlier, we have Donnie Darko, which is kind of similar to the story. There's a lot of reports that maybe Donnie Darko was inspired by the Bunny Man legends because it is set in the same kind of area.
Oh, right, yeah.
And as you know from the movie, it's about a guy who all of a sudden sees this imaginary man in a bunny suit who tells him the world's going to end.
I totally forgot that was in Virginia, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's called Middlesex, Virginia there. But it's like every town, Virginia. So there was, in 2011, a film, Bunny Man, and it had two sequels, Bunny Man Massacre and Bunny Man Vengeance.
That sounds savage.
Oh, they were savage. These are a slasher-style offering of the Bunny Man legend. It's about a man in a bunny costume who just kills everybody for whatever reason they do.
Because why not?
I'm really honestly surprised it didn't happen earlier. Like, this is the first I've seen of any bunny slasher movies. They've been an epidemic since then. But, like, during the 70s and 80s, like, when this was big, where was the bunny slasher?
Okay, because check this. I have my theory about where the bunny slasher was.
Okay.
The bunny slasher was still growing up in its little bunny slasher suburbia. And that's what happened. It got to 2011 and it was like, oh no, suburbia is here to stay. I must slash and slay. Okay. Oh, that rhymed. That's the tagline for the movie.
Okay.
Suburbia is here to stay, so I must slash and slay.
Well, I haven't had the chance to watch these yet, so I don't know how close they are to the Bunny Man. So if not, we're making this version and we're throwing that tagline in. That's amazing.
He's like an anti-hero.
Yes.
Fighting capitalism.
Oh, those are so popular too in horror now. It's like, you know, we're killing people, but it's like, how do you kill teenagers? Because we don't want teenagers to die. Oh, we kill capitalist investors. Everybody wants them to die. Eat the rich. So, also in 2013 and 2014, there was a band called Mantua Finials. They performed a rock opera based on the Bunny Man legends.
Of course they did.
This was comes from the mind of Jim Waters, who created the band and the rock opera based on the events when he heard them at age 11 in Fairfax.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was there when the original stories were being told, and he remembers like how it was just all of a sudden one day there's a Bunny Man in the neighborhood.
That's so crazy.
And finally, while there's not a direct reference to this Bunny Man, there is a popular video game called Dead by Daylight, and it introduced a killer character in 2017 called the Huntress. So this is a woman. She wears a bunny mask, and she throws hatchets at her victims.
That's so close.
So close. So that is the analysis on the Bunny Man. There's not a lot that goes in here. I would definitely recommend reading Patricia's report on it. It's definitely an interesting read as far as how they researched this. In the cases that they did find, that what they did is they investigated cases from 1870 all the way to 1970, just looking for anything that featured like escape convicts or, you know, revenge killings, like, you know, somebody, you know, killing wife and kids and stuff like that. And they did find some that, you know, were pretty interesting. Like I said, they didn't have anything to do with these legends, but if you're interested in learning a little bit more about this, I definitely check those out.
Can you link us to it in your show notes?
Absolutely, I will. As well as some of the Washington Post articles. You can still find them. I believe you need a subscription, but I was able to log in and at least get the clippings from the original ones. And it is what it is, but basically it. So with this, I wanted to end this with saying that this is actually going to be kind of the last Fairy Tales we're getting on a regular basis. So going forward, the podcast is changing. I'm going to be rebranding everything and moving it under a new name called The Fear Files. Now, this is due to kind of a need that Fairy Tales, or the concept that I had for Fairy Tales starting out, was I wanted to find stories that intrigued me. And I actually wanted to start with creepypastas, which is why I started with Slender Man, because I felt like nobody was covering cases like that or stories like that. And it just kind of evolved, and the reason I had to take such a huge hiatus is because this was bigger than I knew it was going to be, and the format that I built for Fairy Tales just wasn't fitting anymore. When I re-released it about a month ago with the couple episodes, Smiley Face Killer and the Rippers, I realized just how true that was, that Fairy Tales as a podcast format is just kind of a little too restricting for what I want to do. So going forward, I am going to be moving everything. We're not changing the location of the podcast. So if you're still subscribed to Fairy Tales now, you're still going to have access to all the old Fairy Tales episode, because I am going to archive all of them and keep them up. I'm going to be updating a lot of them and changing them. But what's going to happen is on Saturdays, I'm going to have Fear Files, which is a analysis of generalized fears and how they apply to us in true crime, urban legend, and story settings. For example, the first episode coming out this Saturday is about the fear of flying, where we're actually going to cover the flight of TWA 800 and how it inspired the movie Final Destination. So along with the Fear Files, I am keeping Fairy Tales alive and thriving. It's going to go to a semi-monthly, about twice a month, I'm going to release a new Fairy Tales. These are going to be smaller episodes, and they're still going to focus on stories, creepypastas, urban legends, and analyzing those in a smaller 30 to 45 minute format. And then I'm also going to be introducing what's called Movie Madness Mondays, where I'm also going to be breaking down some of my favorite movies or maybe movies that inspired or tie into the Fear Files of the week and going into where they came from, the plot of them, and just giving general trivia and information that I find interesting. So going forward, we're going to have weekly episodes on the Fear Files, and then hopefully once and twice a month, you're going to have extra accoutrements with Fairy Tales and Movie Madness, giving you 3 episodes sometimes a week, and then you add in our Beautiful Places to Die on a sister podcast run by Abby, and you'll have 4 episodes for your spooky weekends almost every week, or at least twice a month.
And if you can't get enough of Chris's creepy stories, Beautiful Places to Die does feature those in the form of our campfire stories. So definitely check that out. It's wonderful, original, spooky stories.
So I definitely thank you guys for sticking around with Fairy Tales for so long. You're coming back from after my long break. I definitely appreciate you checking me out again. And I look forward to what I'm doing in the future. I've been deep into this research, and I think I have a really good case to share with you guys soon. And I have so many episodes ideas and all written out. So for now, I'm going to leave you with the Bunny Man. Definitely check us out on the new Fear Files. You'll see the links change. You'll see the icon change. You'll see the name change. And then I'll be dropping the Instagram, the YouTube, and a few other places that you can catch us up on so you can get more information. For now, take care and have a good night.